Let us pray. As we come together on this day to worship Thee with our minds and our hearts, make Thy presence known to us, both through Thy comfort, through Thy excitement, and through the koinonia that man can experience only through Thee. Bless this endeavor and our speaker, and let the hearing of these words be a monument in our growth and a tribute to our service. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. It is a pleasure for me to introduce to you on this morning Dr. William Lumpkin, who will bring to us today the second in the series of lectures sponsored by the Carver Barnes Memorial Foundation. The topic of Dr. Lumpkin's address this morning is John Asplund, Peripatetic Scout.
Dr. Rogers and friends, I have the pleasure this morning of introducing to some of you John Asplund, one of the founders of Baptist Historical Research in the South, a man whom I like to speak of as the clerk who became God's peripatetic scout. Morgan Edwards' researches on the Baptist churches of the South were of the greatest importance, as we saw yesterday, especially from the standpoint of initiating the field of study. Edwards' discoveries were remarkable indeed for their comprehensiveness and accuracy. They form a basis for all subsequent histories of the period of beginnings of Baptist life in the South. However, Edwards' materials belonged to a time prior to the flowering of the Southern Great Awakening, and to a day when Baptists were as yet an insignificant component of the religious life of the nation. But by the end of the revolutionary struggle, their strength was greatly increased. Scattered and lacking general organization, the churches could scarcely have been canvassed after 1780 in a single tour of the region as Morgan Edwards had done. Moreover, Edwards' materials on the Southern churches were not published in his lifetime. Beyond the author's attempt to set them in order in 1772, it is not known that Edwards himself made any other use of them. This fact invites speculation. We wonder why he did not publish additional materials. Did he lose interest in the history of the churches? This is most unlikely. Did the two efforts at publishing his materials on the Pennsylvania churches and the New Jersey churches meet with such unenthusiastic response that Edwards gave up the idea of further publication? This too seems unlikely, for it appears that all copies of his two publications were sold? Was he unable to finance additional publications? Or did his drink problem so becloud his reputation that he could not hope successfully to publish again? He was disciplined for a period by the Philadelphia church because of his excessive use of alcohol. What is as likely, however, is that he was so burdened with practical concerns, making a living for his family, running his plantation, that he gave up the idea of writing a general history of the Baptists. And with the demise of that idea went abandonment of all thought of further publication of the materials. His materials, as we have seen, concerning the northern colonies, came into the possession of Isaac Backus and were used in his history of the denomination in New England. His notebook materials, those accumulated during his travels and concerned with the southern colonies, passed into the hands of Richard Furman and were long lost to sight. It was inevitable that the task which had so much captured the imagination of Edwards should be taken up later in the century by a man wishing to record the amazing Baptist expansion accompanying the latter phases of the Southern Great Awakening. These would face a far more formidable task than Edwards, for the Baptists were meanwhile becoming numerous, widespread, and prominent throughout the land. What was required on the part of an investigator around 1790 was a willingness to travel extensively in the South, to which region the center of gravity of Baptist strength had shifted dramatically. A man was needed who had the sustained motivation, great curiosity, and unflagging zeal of an explorer, and who was not cumbered by pastoral or family responsibilities. Such a man appeared in the unlikely person of John Asplund. As his name suggests, Asplund was not a person of British rootage. He was a native of central Sweden who came to this country as a young man. Having been trained from early youth as a clerk, he left his native land, perhaps in 1775, to go on a commercial venture to Great Britain. It has been speculated that he was an agent for copper interests and that he sought to sell copper from Swedish mines to the British Admiralty. It is known that in this period, Admiral Rodney and Lord Sandwich, First Lord of the Admiralty, were pioneering in the use of copper sheathing to prevent fouling of the bottoms of British men of war. They were absolute pioneers in the use of this metal on the bottoms of ships. Whether Asplund was successful as a salesman in England is not known. If he had success, it was of short duration. For a time, in order to maintain himself, he secured employment as a clerk in that country. It appears that he was in Portsmouth, the principal center of British naval operations, or possibly in some other southern port of England, when he fell into the hands of a British press gang. British law permitted the Navy to impress able-bodied men in seaport towns during times of war or whenever there was particular need for able-bodied seamen. It is likely that the press gang which laid violent hands on John Askeland did not bother to inquire about his nationality. Askeland was put aboard a British man of war destined to proceed in convoy to America. The convoy may well have been one of those bringing the army of Lord Cornwallis to the New World. In that case, after a slight delay off New York, where the squadron of Sir Peter Parker was enlarged by the addition of other troop ships, the convoy made its way southward as far as Charleston, South Carolina. On the way, the convoy paused off Wilmington to take on board troops before proceeding to lay siege to Charleston. Off South Carolina, British troops managed to go ashore near Sullivan's Island, and when they attempted to occupy that island, they encountered determined resistance from the colonial forces under General Charles Lee. The first siege of Charleston failed, and the British, after refitting, turned northward. John Askeland managed to escape from his involuntary service to the British Navy. Whether the escape was effected on the southern journey or the northern, we cannot say. The details of his escape are not preserved, but he went ashore on the coast of North Carolina. During the American Revolution, Askeland engaged in various maritime pursuits, possibly taking part in trading expeditions with the West Indies and helping to smuggle goods through the Outer Banks and up the rivers of North Carolina and Virginia. Washington's army at Valley Forge was supplied largely by this route. When the British had blockaded the major American ports, New York and Boston, Norfolk and Charleston, the Americans proved that there was yet one avenue by which they could stay in touch with the outer world. In small, shallow draft vessels, they could slip over the bars of the Outer Banks at high tide and fly to the rich warehouses of the West Indies. A favorite route for the return trip was through Ocracoke Inlet, up the Albemarle Sound, and up the Chowan and Blackwater Rivers to South Key in Virginia. From there, the munitions and other goods went overland by wagon to Suffolk, and thence by boat down to Hampton Roads and up the Chesapeake Bay, and so to Valley Forge. Shortly after the close of the war, in 1782, John Askeland was converted to experiential faith under the ministry of Elder David Walsh and united with the Ballard's Bridge Baptist Church of Chowan County, North Carolina. Straightway, he began to test his spiritual gifts, and within a year or two, he was licensed by the Ballard's Bridge Church to the public exercise of his gifts. In 1782 or 83, he traversed familiar waterways in going up the Chowan and Blackwater Rivers to Southampton County, Virginia, where he settled for a time. There he appears to have identified himself informally with what is recorded as the Southampton Baptist Church, although he continued to look to Ballard's Bridge for his ministerial credentials. The Southampton Church has not been satisfactorily identified. It often happened that the First Baptist Church in a county took the name of that county, at least in popular usage. There was no constituted Baptist Church in Southampton County, so far as we know, in 1783. But a branch of the Mills Swamp Church of Isle of Wight County had been meeting at South Quay on the Blackwater since 1775. This society was not constituted as a separate church until 1785. So for 10 years, it met as a branch or a society. This fact may account for Asplund's continuing to maintain his ties with the Ballard's Bridge Church. Asplund had never been still for long periods since leaving his native Sweden, and he was soon restless to resume his travels. In 1785, therefore, he returned to Europe and spent more than a year visiting Sweden, Finland, Lapland, Denmark, Germany, and England. In London, he appears to have visited John Rippon, minister of the Carter Lane Baptist Church, who may already have been contemplating the preparation of a publication with a view to promoting an universal knowledge and interchange among the Baptists of the world. Rippon must have suggested to Asplund that he cooperate with him in gathering materials on the North American churches, and possibly that he consider publishing an American Baptist digest of his own. At any rate, following his return to Virginia, Asplund soon took up the work of an itinerant preacher and gatherer of historical materials on the churches. He was admirably fitted for the task. An untiring traveler, he was happiest when he was on the road. He looked upon hardship and exposure as challenges to his manhood, and his pursuit of historical data was even more avidly carried on than that of Morgan Edwards had been. His training as a clerk fitted him for searching out, cataloging, and preserving infinite lists of data. His love for the Brotherhood was genuine, and he was soon a familiar figure wherever Baptist meetings were held. Travelers might have met him on any woods path, in the south or in the north, on any day, and need not have been surprised, for he was always on the road. Asplund did not have outstanding gifts as a preacher, though apparently he sustained himself through an itinerant ministry. The marked accent of his mother tongue lingered in his speech and embarrassed his earnest efforts at becoming a great preacher. Nevertheless, to a marked degree, he mastered the English language on its grammatical side and developed an effective written prose style. He probably never accepted the pastoral oversight of a church, and it is not certain that he was ever ordained. Until his visit to England, his ministry had had no certain sense of direction. He was simply a local preacher. But following that visit, he decried the shape of a ministry for which he was particularly adapted. Nevertheless, he waited for several years, as he says, to see if someone else, in more favorable circumstances than he, would undertake the publication of such a work as he contemplated. Asplund found encouragement among a few of his brethren to undertake the task of visiting the churches, but it was ultimately on his own initiative that he entered upon the work. Apparently, members of the General Committee of the Baptists of Virginia at first took little notice of his plans and were inclined to have small regard for his capabilities. Nevertheless, he attempted to survey the Virginia churches in 1788 and the first part of 1789. Finding encouragement to go on, he determined to travel throughout the country, visiting the churches. In a period of 18 months of 1790 and 91, Asplund traveled about 7,000 miles, chiefly on foot, as he tells us, and visited about 215 churches and 15 associational meetings. His journeying took him from Virginia northward to New England and southward to Georgia. In the course of his travels, he says he became personally acquainted with 250 ministers of Baptist churches. Upon his return to Southampton County, Virginia, Asplund prepared an introduction to his materials on July the 14th, 1791. At least this is the date the introduction was completed. In the introduction he wrote, quote, "Having been brought up with a view to the business of merchandising, I have been accustomed to keeping accounts, and now prefer accounts of souls with their faces set Zionward, to those which only respect money or trade. I have a natural turn for traveling, and being convinced I could not better spend my time than in itinerating to preach the gospel and to collect materials which may assist the future historian, and though I have met with many discouragements from narrow-minded persons, whose illiberal souls are not concerned for the public welfare, I appeal to the searcher of hearts that my principal design is to make the Baptists better acquainted with each other, that union may more generally obtain among them." End of quote. Benefiting from an extensive correspondence as well as his travels, around the middle of 1791, Asplund had completed preparation of the manuscript of his work, which he entitled Register of the Baptist Denomination in North America to the 1st of November, 1790. He took his manuscript to Richmond, where he encountered a great deal of trouble, he says, having his work printed by April 1792. During the long period of waiting, he found it necessary to be at a distance from the press, and thus was under necessity to depend upon the printer's handling of the materials. The result of this arrangement was the inclusion of many imperfections in the work. Asplund had accumulated some money, it appears, during the Revolution. possibly as a blockade runner, which was quite a lucrative trade. And so he had been able to travel at his own expense and to carry on an extensive correspondence with churches and associations. He did not find the cost of printing the first edition too burdensome, but he was greatly displeased with the quality of the finished product. He had provided some misinformation on his own part, and the printer had compounded errors with his treatment of the text. He determined, Asplund did, that another printing was called for. He seems to have suppressed the first printing of Dixon, the Richmond printer. It simply was not up to standard, and he refused to distribute it. Hastening to Philadelphia, Asplund secured the services of Mr. Dobson in preparing a second printing, which appeared in September of the same year. Although Dobson was a well-known printer, he too failed to provide a product to the satisfaction of the author. Asplund was distressed that some faults had crept into the second printing as well as the first, but admitted that these were partly owing to my own neglect and partly to the printer. His printing expenses had now exceeded $100 for this printing. But more expenses lay ahead. He had determined to send a copy of his register to every Baptist church in America and in Great Britain, and to send the copies gratis. Consequently, he packaged his registers and sent the packages to distribution centers in this country and in Britain. It would appear that the second printing provided him 1,000 copies. Asplund's register marked a decided advance over Edwards' materials. It was a far more detailed work, numbering 60 pages in quarto, and its ordering was superior to that of Edwards' work. Edwards had identified only 103 churches in the entire South in 1772, while Asplund dealt with more than twice that number in Virginia alone, and with 867 in the entire country. Asplund's tabulation of facts was done in beautiful order and with precision. Not without some errors, of course, but in beautiful order. He discarded Edwards' prose style, and his great concern was to account, rather, he discarded Edwards' great concern to account for Baptist beginnings in the several states. Asplund had no interest in listing monetary values in the states, as Edwards had done, and he did not seek to locate meeting houses in terms of their distance from Philadelphia. Neither did he worry about such details as pastors' salaries. These fluctuated, the number of children in pastors' homes, and the length of time ministers spent in prison during the time of persecution. Instead, Asplund put in parallel columns information of enduring worth under the following categories: the names of churches, the counties in which they were located, their locations with respect to state capitals, associational membership, dates of organization, names of ministers, and numbers of members. The same information was given for each state. Attention was paid to General and Negro Baptist churches. But, of course, Asplund recognized that the particular Baptists had carried the day, the white particular Baptists had carried the day by 1790. To the first edition, Asplund added an appendix containing remarks upon practical religion. We do not have time to consider that. The Philadelphia printing of the first edition carried several important additions beyond the Richmond printing. 6 pages of associational sketches were given, including dates of constitution of the associations, confessional positions, extent of interassociational correspondence, and meeting dates of the associations, extracts from associational minutes, and circular letters were given. Also, in clearly hortatory style, a list of rules of decorum for an association was supplied. Here the preacher dared indicate, quote, some inconsistencies among us. Contrary to the doctrine of our Master Jesus and to our holy profession. End of quote. Named in the list are the following. First, keeping our fellow creatures in bondage, which have as good a right as we to civil and religious liberty. He was an abolitionist. 2, family duty greatly neglected. He must have seen lots of preachers running about the country, leaving their families behind. 3, extravagance or superfluity, especially in dress. 4, poor support of the gospel, so that God's servants could not be wholly given up to their great calling. 5, lax attendance upon our public worship, communion seasons, and church meetings for business. 6, that our brethren who are called to the ministry are not encouraged. And 7, some churches are too soon constituted and some ministers too hastily ordained. Think on these things and may the Lord bless you, my dear brethren, concludes the preacher. In 1792, Asplund's work received the approbation of the General Committee of Virginia, made up of representatives of the several district associations, and the thanks of that body for his offer to give each church a copy. He had been given no official authorization by the committee to proceed with his work, but the committee could not help but express thanks for his personal zeal and for the excellence of his production. Several varieties of the first edition may have been prepared in Philadelphia and Richmond. It appears so. We have no perfect copies of these first editions. Rather, they have been pieced together the parts of several printings. One of these omitted the appendix, Remarks Upon Practical Religion. The printer of the second variety was probably either Thomas Nicholson or Augustine Davis, Richmond printers. Asplund was disappointed when some of his plans for distributing the register were not carried out. His correspondent in Britain found the task of dispersing his shipment throughout the land too difficult. Many copies were not delivered. In all, the author reckoned that some 300 volumes of the first edition were lost, as he says, by miscarriages. But the man was a perfectionist. He would not settle for such a record. In order to remedy the defects of the first edition and to include new information, Asplund determined to undertake a new edition. First, he would go on another tour, even grander than the one which covered 7,000 miles. Late in 1792, he set out on a preaching and note-taking journey, which occupied 2 years. Pressing into the interior, he swept along the frontiers of the new country. before he undertook a new survey of the coastal region from Georgia to New Hampshire. He covered 10,000 miles in all, visited about 550 churches, 24 associations, and added to the circle of his ministerial acquaintance until it included 700 Baptist preachers. No man in the country knew so many preachers as he. On this tour, he must have visited both Morgan Edwards and Isaac Backus, for he writes of extracting materials from their libraries. Meanwhile, he corresponded with John Rippon in London, and for the years 1790 to 94, procured the minutes and the circular letters of all of the district associations in the United States. By the time Asplund reached Boston in 1794, he had accumulated more materials than he could hope to use and faced the task of extracting the most useful information for publication. In late August or early September 1794, the Boston printer, John W. Folsom, prepared Asplund's second edition of the register called the Universal Register of the Baptist Denomination in North America for the years 1790, 91, 92, 93, and part of 94. The 1794 edition was a far more elaborate and complete work than that of 92. The author expressed in the preface the hope that his brethren would not, quote, consider this feeble attempt as an effort of pride and vain glory, end of quote, for the publication expressed a real desire to promote the interest of the Redeemer's kingdom. The tabulations were done by states with remarkable clarity for the entire country. Church memberships were brought up through 1793. The smaller groups of Baptists were not overlooked, although the Mennonites and the Dunkers were omitted in this edition. Never before had been prepared so complete a catalog of information about the Baptist churches of America. Listed were 1,032 churches, 73,400 members, and 1,280 ministers. Data on all associational meetings in the country for the years 1790 to 94 were included. A listing of Baptists in other parts of the world was extracted from Rippon's Register of London. There was also a note on the sending of Carey and Thomas to Bengal by the English Particular Baptists in 1793, perhaps one of the earliest announcements in this country of the beginning of the modern missions era. The new edition was dedicated, quote, to all the members of the Baptist denomination of the several communions in Europe, especially in America, and most of the associations which have encouraged this feeble undertaking, namely the General Committee in Virginia, the Woodstock Association in Vermont and New Hampshire, the Stonington in Connecticut and Rhode Island, the Vermont in Vermont and New York. Most of all, the dedication is to these associations, with a desire of promoting universal knowledge of their increase, faith, and order, and in expectation that it may be continued by others more qualified than the unworthiest of all their brethren, the author. End of quote. Appended to the tables were some original contributions of the author. One of these was an interesting description of a Baptist in 7 points. Would you like to know what a Baptist is? First, Asplund says, a Baptist is one who has had an experience of God's grace upon his soul. Second, he has faith in and has submitted himself to the holy ordinance of baptism. Third, he has been immersed or dipped under the water only one time in the name of the Trinity. Fourth, the baptismal element must be water. It would be wrong to dip in liquor, milk, or oil, he says. Fifth, the administrator of his baptism must have been a qualified person, namely a converted person believing in immersion, and himself immersed by a Baptist minister duly ordained by laying on of hands and of good standing in an orderly Baptist church. Sounds like Asplund was a forerunner of the landmark brethren. Sixth, a Baptist must himself be a member of an orderly Baptist church. And seventh, he must maintain good standing in such a church. In all of these points, Asplund's concern for church order is prominent. Another brief addendum describes the proper procedure for the licensing of ministers as follows. Quote, members of a church who appear to have a gift of a public nature, that is, for the advantage of the public, are admitted as candidates for the ministry. They are generally, first, verbally admitted to exercise their gifts in the limits of the church, in the way of public prayer, exhortation, and expounding or commenting upon a certain passage of Scripture. And after some time, if their gift seems to increase, they are admitted to preach publicly. And if found useful, they are, by a written license, permitted to preach in the neighboring churches. End of quote. Also in this edition, Asplund announced his intention of publishing his autobiography within 6 months. He had lived an exciting life as an adventurer and as an itinerant, and he wished to record for posterity some account of his journeying, but his biography never appeared. If it was begun, it was later pushed aside in order that the author might enroll in Dartmouth College. Asplund had canvassed New England quite thoroughly, finding churches in such unlikely places as Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and among the Mohican Indians near New London, Connecticut. No place in the entire region claimed his interest so much as Hanover, New Hampshire. Perhaps he had visited there before 1794, but in that year he determined to settle in the college town, quote, for a few years in order to acquire a liberal education, end of quote. Asplund was probably in his 47th year when he entered Dartmouth. The college had been founded in Connecticut by the Reverend Eleazar Wheelock in 1769 as a school for Indians whom it sought to prepare for missionary service. Moving to Hanover in 1771, it had turned almost exclusively to the education of white youths. The new location proved a fortunate one, for the school prospered from the first in its new frontier location. When Asplund enrolled there, President John Wheelock, son of the founder, presided over the institution. At Hanover, Asplund was within the confines of the Woodstock Baptist Association, whose member churches lay in both Vermont and New Hampshire. This was one of the four associations which was credited by Asplund with giving him most encouragement in his work. At Hanover, a Baptist church was in existence by 1795 under the pastoral oversight of Abel Bridgman. It had but 30 members in 1796. Its small size and perhaps the recency of its organization may explain its non-associated status at that time. It is represented as a close communion, Calvinistic Baptist church observing the first day Sabbath. In addition to giving attention to his college courses, Asplund traveled often to various parts of New England during his stay at Hanover. He willingly accepted preaching engagements. He also resolved to publish in April each year, while residing in Hanover, a new edition of the Register. Instead of traveling throughout the country, he would now depend on correspondents to keep his information up to date. He would count on associational clerks to supply data, especially on the southern and western regions. In April 1796, the Hanover printers Dunham and True published for Asplund the Universal Register of the Baptist Denomination in North America for 1794 and 95. It was advertised to sell for 25 cents. Contents of the 96 register were presented under four headings. First stood the informational tables on the churches, including names of churches, counties and states they lay in, associational membership, names of pastors, names of ministers and preachers, and membership totals. The second division contained statistical and ministerial alterations since 1793. The third offered a schedule of associations with associational correspondence. The fourth section was entitled, A Short Account of the Baptists in Other Parts of the World. Thus, by 1796, Asplund had refined his presentation of material until it was a model of efficiency and completeness. In the 96 register, Asplund still claimed his credentials as a licentiate of the Ballard's Bridge, North Carolina Church, adding a footnote concerning himself which read, quote, at Dartmouth College, New Hampshire, studying there the languages. Was he learning Greek? The intention to publish a new register each April was not carried out after 1796. The reason probably was that Asplund's resources were running low. His publications had never been profitable, and in the last years of the century, the demand for them declined markedly. The church's growth rate slowed considerably in that period, and economic depression was abroad in the land. In the preface to the 96 register, Asplund had thought it important to say, quote, subscriptions directed to me will be thankfully received, end of quote. Not enough subscriptions came to maintain continued production of the register. Asplund appears to have continued for more than 2 years at Dartmouth, probably a longer period than he had ever stayed at any single place since leaving Sweden in 1775. He had a genuine thirst for knowledge, it is evident. The Swedish Americans' movements upon leaving Hanover cannot be traced, but it is certain that he moved southward. His last years were spent on the eastern shore of Maryland and Virginia. In that region, he lost his life by accidental drowning in 1807. Seeking to swim across Fishing Creek in Maryland, he perished in the attempt. Asplund's contributions to Baptist historical research are of first magnitude. His registers contain the fullest collections of information on the churches and the associations of the 18th century. Such collections could have been made only on the basis of the most dedicated love for the task of preserving for posterity the invaluable records of 18th century American Baptist history. No other historian traveled so widely or profitably in the South as Asplund. His materials became a primary source for early Baptist historians. David Benedict, in his history, the first general history of American Baptists, testifies that Asplund's Register, quote, has been of peculiar service in the preparation of this work, end of quote. It continues to be of scarcely less import to later historians. The Annual Register was the forerunner of the regional and national denominational annuals of the present. In its day, it provided a record of ministerial credentials and of doctrinal standards in the denomination. Thus, in addition to its role as a conservator of historical data, it performed the important function of promoting denominational self-consciousness and unity in the critical period prior to the perfecting of a general organization of American Baptists. When a Baptist minister became a Unitarian in belief, it was the Register which first made known to the fellowship throughout the country that this brother had been defrocked by the Baptists. In several profound ways, therefore, we are debtors to the obscure 18th century preacher clerk of Swedish extraction, John Asplund. As David Benedict said, quote, the Baptist churches in America have reason to respect the memory of that diligent inquirer into their number, origin, and character. Here ends our second lecture.